the rules for those as God instructed. So just as a bit of a reminder, you know, as we're going through the book of Exodus and Leviticus and part of Numbers, you know, kind of a very broad division. The first part of Exodus, you know, we read about Moses, and then we read about the plagues, and then we have the actual Exodus, the people leaving out of Egypt. And then, really the rest of Exodus, the rest of Leviticus, all the way to Numbers chapter 10 is about what happens at Mount Sinai and the rules, the law that God gives, and the rules for all of these things that we're talking about, the tabernacle, and the garments and the sacrifices that we'll talk about tonight. So there's the map again. We are at the bottom of that at Mount Sinai. Okay. So Mike went over the tabernacle and all the instructions that God gave for that. So as that is being built, and the instructions for that is as that's being built, these other things are taking place as well. The garments are being made. And remember that God specified and gave special ability to skilled craftsmen who then taught others how to do these different crafts and ability to make these things. And so we're going to get into the garments. So first of all, who are the priests? We've talked about that. Now, the priests were specified to be whom? The sons of Aaron, right? Yeah, exactly. So, and the sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, are the ones we remember because we have more information about them later on, right? Also, Eleazar and Ithamar. All right. As the sons of Aaron. Now, all the Levites, you know, all the Levites were not priests, were they? Now, they had some jobs and they were helpers and they had some specific tasks, but they were not the priests. It was just the sons of Aaron who were going to be the priests. They had specific duties regarding the worship and the tabernacle. And the tasks and the work there. All the Levites, how they were appointed to this role? What was it that made them separate, that God separated them out from everybody else? Okay. They helped Moses at the golden calf, that's right. And I'm thinking even further back in history, back when they left Egypt. Remember that God said that the Levites were, in a way, they belonged to God. They would be the redeemed, the firstborn were going to be redeemed. Instead of taking all the firstborn of everyone, the Levites would be the redeemed, of the group. Because the firstborn belonged to God. Because of what happened, you know, when they left Egypt, right? The last plague when the firstborn were all killed through the land except for Israel. So the Levites were the redeemed and set apart for this purpose. All right. Now, God specifies to make these garments very, very specific instructions for that. We'll go into a good bit of it, but with this and the sacrifices, you know, we're covering a whole lot of material here, so we won't spend a whole lot of time. But the garments, very specific instructions using gold, blue, purple, scarlet, very fine linens were going to be used. And in fact, gold thread, that'd be pretty neat, wouldn't it? I've never seen that before. Couldn't afford it now. But even thread, it was made into threads, very fine threads, and it would be woven, into these garments. The high priest garment, we have more detail about, because there's more things, there's more more intricacies, more things on that than it was for the other priest's garment. So the normal ordinary priest's garment was pretty plain, and we'll talk about that. But they would use those garments, they would go about their day-to-day business, you know, and sacrificing and different things. The high priest's garments, he didn't wear them all the time. It was only he wore it during the 7 days of consecration. We read that when Aaron was consecrated. So that during the consecration, he would wear it. I should have checked on feasts and on special occasions. He may have wore it. I don't know. I didn't check that. Somebody may know that. I don't know that for myself. But they weren't worn very much. The priest, the high priest's special garments here. So, all right. The role of the priest is very important. Before the law of Moses, who offered the sacrifices? In the patriarchal period, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and so forth, Job, during that period, the fathers, the heads of the households did it. Before that, our first instance of sacrificing was when? Cain and Abel, right? Yeah. So it was, we don't know what God's specific instructions were regarding it during those times. But when the law of Moses came, then the priests are definitely set aside to do this work. It was no longer, the heads of households or others. And they were to do it at a specific place. They weren't to do it out in the field or out and about anywhere else. Where were they to bring their sacrifices? You know, to the tabernacle. So, the other roles of the priests, what else were they to do? They were to teach. They were responsible for the people knowing, and they were responsible for the people not knowing on occasions. As you go through the history of the Israelites, they were to teach them all the statutes that God commanded, and keep them informed. They were to keep the sanctuary, the altar, all of the parts of it, and keep that as a very special holy place. And they were to make intercessions. Very obvious, you know, that the priests were the intermediate mediators for the people. And we can go to in Hebrews chapter 7, as we learn, you know, all about these sacrifices and these laws and these rules, we can go then to Hebrews and, you know, some things really fall into place and it makes sense. So, but we'll save that for later. So the garments for the priests included a layering of clothing. Undergarment, essentially boxers, you know, like boxer shorts, like, you know, we would be familiar with. It was to cover all the way down to the thighs. Then they would put over that a plain or a tunic or coat that had some features in it, woven into it. And then over this long white coat or tunic, a robe, it was blue, it was sometimes referred to as the robe of the ephod, because it was what the ephod was attached to. So this was covering it. And onto that robe, then, the ephod was attached. And the ephod is described. It had two stones that attached at the shoulders, and two stones, and there was engraving, you know, like jewelers are engraving on these stones, and on each stone was written the tribes of Israel, six on one, six on the other, and so the ephod was placed on, and then the breastplate was attached onto that. And the breastplate, is in Exodus 28, verses 15 through 30. I'll go over there to that. It's going to be square. It's going to be folded, doubled over, as square, and it'll mount the four rows of stones, as you saw in the picture. It's going to have the stones of the each one for the each of the sons of Israel. A row of rubies, topaz, and emeralds. The second row, turquoise, sapphire, and diamonds. The third row, jacinth, agate, and amethyst. The fourth row, beryl, onyx, and jasper. So a lot of stones here, all set in gold settings. The stones should be according to the sons of Israel, 12 according to their names. So in verse 25 and verse 26, two rings of gold will be placed on the ends that would attach the breastplate to the ephod. Aaron, in verse 29, Aaron will carry the names of the sons of Israel, or bear the names of the sons of Israel in the breastplate of judgment over his heart when he enters the holy place. So it was, think about that mediating aspect of it. When he goes into the holy place, who is he bearing? Who is he carrying? He's carrying, you know, all the sons of Israel. He's carrying everyone. He's the one that goes between. And like I said, when we go to Hebrews, who is that mediator? Who is the one who bears us in that sense? It's the Christ. Yes. He is the high priest. So, now, also, besides the breastplate, so they're in this garb, and the last two elements, are on the robe around the bottom of it, alternating, woven pomegranate shaped, emblems, alternating with bells, right? And so whenever the high priest was going about his duties in the tabernacle, then he could be heard, doing that, with that all the way around the hymns. And then he would have the turban on, and on the turban, there was a gold plate, on the top of it that said, what did it say? Dedicated to Jehovah? Holiness to the Lord. Okay, thank you. Holiness to the Lord. So that was imprinted, there on that. Okay, yeah. That's right, that's what I was about to go to. Inside the breastplate, was a pouch. It was folded over, and the high priest could go into that. He could reach into that and bring out the Urim and the Thummim, one or the other. What exactly those things, those devices are, we don't know. We don't know what they were. There's speculation about it. It could be stones, some other objects. But it was a way for the high priest to communicate with God directly. When questions came up that they needed an answer to, then it was, the way I understand it is that kind of a yes or no type question, then the priest was kind of in the role of a prophet, that he would know what God's will is. And that he could go into that breastplate and pull out either one or the other of the objects and know what God's will was and what God's answer is on a particular matter of law or something else. So, and that became very well. I'll ask you what became of the ephod? It was a way to commune with God, but what did it become later on? Didn't they use that as a thing to be worshipped rather than a commune with God? Okay. It wasn't this one? Okay, he made a different one. Okay, then that's correct. Then. Okay, good. Okay. So, but that is the way that he could, that God could communicate directly with the high priest and with his people. Okay. Any questions or any comments about regarding the garments of the priest? All right. So, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There was a lot of blood to be shed in their work. And that's right. So, and going on to that, the regular robes of the priest as they go about doing their duties, and even Aaron as the high priest, he would remove, you know, the outer garments and do the duties of the priest with sacrificing without all of these on. He would just have the normal robes on. But you can see it's about the same thing. Besides the white, besides the robe, was just that sash around it that had color on it. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. All right. So over in Leviticus, we'll begin with the sacrifices and the rules for the sacrifices. So the sacrifices to God have been a part of God's law, since the beginning when sin entered the world, but we don't know the rules of those until they were offered, you know, in the beginning before the law of Moses. But here, beginning with the law of Moses, well, even back then, he intended for the rules and the laws that he set forth to be obeyed specifically. And, we see with Cain and Abel that was not followed, you know, with in their story. With Cain. When we get to the law of Moses, and there is a lot of information on the exact things to do. Now, in Leviticus 1 through 7, it's pretty general in what we read there. There's other places to go to, and we're going to kind of stay in that, but there's other places to go to find even more specific information. For example, just to mention, for example, depending on this, an animal sacrifice and the size of that sacrifice, you know, of what was offered, then a meal offering that might go along with it, that would go along with it, depending on the size of the flesh, the meat offering would determine how much of the meal offering, you know, was to be offered. It's very specific, and the measurements are given to do that, of the meal offering, the drink offerings went along with it. So very, very specific information. And depending on which sacrifice was needed or the occasion, if it was a feast or one of the prescribed days of atonement, for example, or others, then they would go to that section and be able to fulfill exactly what God wanted. If it was a sin offering for a common person who brings a sin offering, then it was very specific. And it was depending on how much that person could afford as to what he would bring. So a lot of information here, which we won't have time to go into all of it, but we'll cover the basics, I think. So with the burnt offering, the idea is a dedication to God, a burnt offering. In the burnt offering, almost the whole thing was burnt and given to God. In fact, all of it was except for the skin. So if for a burnt offering, signifying a dedication, even atonement, then one would bring the sacrifice and would lay hands on it, all right? And laying hands on it conveyed the idea that this animal was being offered in place of, you know, the person, okay? That animal was doing it, was taking that. So he would take it, and the offerer, whoever brought this, the offerer would bring it and bring it to a specific place, and then he would kill it and flay it or skin it right there. The priest would take the blood in a burnt offering. He would take it, sprinkle it on the altar, about the altar, around it. Then the different parts of the animal, the sacrifice, would be put on the altar, the fire burning all the way through the night. It was to be kept burning all the way through the night. So the animal was consumed, the sacrifice was consumed. The next day, the ashes would be removed. It'd be taken out, the ashes taken out of the camp to a specific location. You know, that was the process for the, now each one of these sacrifices that we talk about are, they're all done somewhat similarly, but, you know, differently in most cases. In a burnt offering, a person could bring a bullock or a small, calf, male, sheep, goats, doves, pigeons, according to what someone could, afford to bring. Now, in the burnt offering, it was all burned up, except the skin. The skin was removed, and it was given to the priest. But it was all burned up otherwise. None of it was left to eat. None of it was left for any other purpose. It was a complete dedication to the Lord. The next one is in Leviticus chapter 2, and it is the meal offering or grain offering. So the meal offering on occasions was offered by itself, the grain offering by itself, but most of the time it accompanied other sacrifice, other sacrifices. For example, along with a sin offering or others. So the grain and the drink offering together with other offerings, very specific, like I mentioned before, very specific portions depending on the sacrifice, meat sacrifice that was offered, very specific portions were given according to that. Sometimes the offering was brought raw, in other words, not cooked, nothing done with it, raw, just the flour, the oil. Sometimes it was baked, fried, pan fried, skillet fried, or deep fried in oil, or roasted. The oil that was brought with it was always frankincense. And sometimes it was mixed in with it depending on the purpose and of the particular occasion. It could be mixed in with it. It could be offered separately. On occasion, it was burnt on the altar. but mainly this offering went to the priest, and the priests could take that and eat it for themselves. There was not to be any yeast in the meal offering. There was not to be any honey at all in it. I don't think there was one that could have salt and there was one that couldn't. In verse 13, season with salt. Okay, yeah, salt it. Yeah, I've got it written in there. yeah, and it says verse specifically, the salt of the covenant of your God shall not be lacking from your grain offering. With all your offerings, you shall offer salt. So yeah. All right, and the peace offering coming from the Hebrew shalom, the peace offering was, there was a few different versions of the peace offering or categories. Thanksgiving, a vow, or a free will or voluntary offering, and depending on the occasion and the purpose of what someone was bringing. It also, a lot of times, was done in combination with other sacrifices. So, for example, let's see if I've got it up here. Yes. So, with a combination of sacrifices, the order was very specific, for these occasions. For example, a sin offering would be first, and that makes, we can understand that, asking for forgiveness, having that relationship again, and the removal of sins in a sin offering. Then the burnt offering, dedication, complete dedication and atonement. And then the peace offering is that ensuing fellowship, the renewing of that fellowship of God and man. So with the peace offering, the idea, sometimes it was the supplication, or the acknowledgement that all is good between God and man. So, with the peace offering, let's talk about the free will offering and the vow offering. They're both very similar. So, it could be, in this case, the free will or the vow offering could be meant, it could be male or female without defect from cattle, sheep, or goats. The offerer would bring the sacrifice. He would lay his hands on it. Again, the idea of the representative nature of that sacrifice. And then the offerer, he kills that sacrifice. So, then the priest would take the blood and he would sprinkle it on the altar and about the altar. And then the offerer would take himself, as he brings this, he would bring the fat from the animal, and as well as the breast part of the sacrifice, and he would bring that to the priest. Now, but he wouldn't give it to the priest, he would offer it, and we refer to it, I think, as a wave offering, okay? And he would take that and he would bring it and he would present it to the altar, but then he would bring it back, and as though he's giving it to God, for God, as a sacrifice, but then God's giving it back, and it was then given to the priest, and that was the portion for the priest that was holy to them and that they were could use for themselves. The priest would also receive in this thanksgiving and vow offerings, he'd also receive a heave offering. And in this sense, it was the offering from the offerer to the priest themselves, not to God, but to, you know, God's ordained priests. And that would involve the thigh or the ham portion of the sacrifice. Now, after this, there was a lot of that sacrifice that's left. And of the rest of the animal that's left, that was actually given back to the offerer. And he, along with his family, those who were clean, would eat that with his family and companions with him. What if they couldn't eat all of it? What if there was some left over? In this case, they could eat it on a second day if there were some left over, but it's specific that they couldn't leave it for a third day. They could leave it for a second day, but not for a third day. Then the Thanksgiving offering is the same animals as the others, but in addition, there was also to be given cakes of unleavened bread mixed with oil, cakes with oil, fine flour soaked in oil, cakes of unleavened bread. But this one could also include bread that was leavened. This is the only sacrifice that could have leaven in it, the Thanksgiving offering. And but there was also one other difference from the Thanksgiving and the others was that none of it could be left over. It all had to be eaten on the day that it was offered. All right, now let's get to the sin offering. And the sin offering, you know, I don't know if you can say as any of, they're all ordered by God and God specifies these rules, but the sin offering is what would remove the guilt of sin and remove and to abate God's wrath from that sin and restore favor between God and man. So the sin offering was very important. I wouldn't say any more important, but it was definitely important to man to restore this relationship and to remove sin. And the sin offerings were done in different manners. There would be a sin offering for a whole congregation, for the entire people, on specified days, for example, the Day of Atonement. There were specific times, also on the Day of Atonement, the priest would offer a sin offering. On the Day of Atonement, he would offer a sin offering for himself, for the priest, and then he would offer the sin offering for the entire congregation. But there were other times if there was sin, then the priest, in the priest's life, then the sin offering was for him as well on an individual basis. The rulers, if there was sin, for him, and then other individual, common, all the other, people as well, who needed, and had, the rules for this. So, the sin offerings are, you know, if we talk about, you know, exactly the process for the sin offering, it's very similar, but in this case it had to be a young bullock, and, you know, the offerer would bring, we'll just take, for example, a priest. The priest on the Day of Atonement, he would offer a sin offering for himself, for the priest, before he would do anything else. So he would bring the offering, lay his hands on its head, and he would kill it. And Now, the blood, which in other sacrifices we talked about, was sprinkled at the altar and around it, not in the sin offering case, the blood was treated very differently for a sin offering. And I think that's important for us to understand that it was treated very differently than anything else. So in the sin offering, the blood was taken into the tabernacle. So the blood was taken into the tabernacle itself, and it was sprinkled before the veil. Now, what was the veil? What was on the other side of the veil? Yeah, the presence of God himself. So this blood for a sin offering, where man is, you know, looking for forgiveness of sins, this blood was taken and sprinkled before the veil of the most holy place in the presence of God. Then some of the blood was rubbed on the horns of the altar, back outside, and the rest of the blood was poured down at the base of the altar of burnt offering. Okay? So there's three things, with the blood of the sin offering. Now, priests, in most cases of a sin offering, not in the specific case of the priest's sin offering, but in other sin offerings of the common people or in other cases, part of the sin offering, they would receive part of it. But no one ate of the sin offering if the blood was carried into the tabernacle. Very specific distinguishing mark that for a sin offering, if the blood was carried into the tabernacle and sprinkled there before the veil, then no one ate of it. Okay, the priest didn't receive a portion of it at all. No one ate of that. All right. So with the one of the that goes right along with a sin offering is a trespass offering. It's in a way it's a specific kind of sin offering, the trespass offering. I'm skipping some. I want to go back before I go through all that. I described the priest in the sin offering, right? Then what about the congregation, the whole congregation, the sin offering there? It was very similar to the priest, but in this case, for the congregation, who would lay their hands on it, the sin offering for it? Well, it was the elders of the tribes would do that. And when would the sin offering take place for the whole congregation? Well, it would take place on their festivals, on their feasts, the Day of Atonement. Anytime the whole congregation was guilty together of transgression of in a specific matter. And then also with the ruler, if the ruler needed to offer a sin offering, then it was very similar. The ruler laid his hands on it, killed it. The blood was not taken into the tabernacle, but it was put on the altar and poured down at the base of the altar. So in this situation, what was left was given to the priests, and they would eat of it, as well as for the common people. During those sin offerings, there were some that was a portion given to the priest. Then going now back to the trespass offerings. So it was a specific kind of sin offering for more kind of detail, more specific sins, in the sense of it involved depriving either God of something that was his or that he had commanded, or of someone else. For example, if if a man sinned in not offering to God what was prescribed, what God had ordered, then that would be a trespass offering, and he would come and offer a trespass offering. He would also have to provide 20% in addition to what he denied God and what God had commanded. And other specific cases, in depriving someone of something that was owed, in different matters of loans or collaterals or something like that. Then, also specific times of sin offerings, we've mentioned the Day of Atonement. So what's the difference in the sin offering on the Day of Atonement? The sin offering, if an individual had committed a sin and a transgression, he could bring his offering and sacrifice and bring that offering and go through that. What if he didn't know that he had sinned? All right? What if he didn't know about it and it never comes to his attention? Well, on the Day of Atonement, the sin offering offered on behalf of the congregation was for that reason. Also with sins of omission and failures to obey and things that someone would do that they haven't done, that they needed to have done with regard to God's laws. And then the laws of restitution involved giving back, restoring to someone, plus a greater percentage of restoring to someone that they had defrauded. There's also the laws in this section regarding the first fruits, of bringing the first fruits to God, and who was to receive these first fruits. Who was it? It was brought to the priest. The priest would use that. It would belong to them. And also the tithes, as the people were tithing, bringing as from crops and their animals, the portions, they were bringing those as well to the priest. Now, the priests did not receive lands. We'll find out later on. They don't receive any land or territories as the others, but they receive cities, and they receive their wages or rewards for all this work that they're doing, because it's very specific, it's very detailed. They had to have their wits about them. God says, they weren't to have any wine or strong drink at all, because they had to have total concentration and commitment to what the task they were given. But in reward for that, the people would bring their tithes, they would bring, and portions of that were for the priests, for them, and for the carrying on the work there at the tabernacle. Anybody have any comments or questions? I know that was a lot of information. I'm not sure I did it justice at all, but that's right. And that's something interesting to note, that for someone who was deliberate, arrogant, defying of God, there was not, that was a transgression, that there was no turning back, there was no sacrifice for. So.